guitarra.
Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-Tip.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Pedal my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, got to get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, got to get it.
Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about HR with the people that are getting it done. So our guest, welcome, John Sumster. Welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Hey, how are you, Brian? What the hell was that I was just listening to?
You know,
a mariachi rap band?
Oh, my God. It's called a Tribe Called Quest, and our music director, also known as William Pincup, has a plethora of interesting songs that I'm exposed to. So
I think they're all done by relatives. Doesn't that sound like something a relative of his would come up with?
it definitely makes me laugh, usually, because I don't know what's coming up, right? Because I don't remember as we schedule the stuff out. So it's always a little bit of a surprise whenever we start. How are you, my friend?
Well, I was actually in New York City with Mr. Tin Cup over the weekend, and I am, so I have been bouncing back and forth across continents for a couple of weeks, and I'm as jet-lagged as you can get. Yesterday I had the ultimate traveler's experience. You know those wonderful headsets that you can get that have the little rubber tips you can insert in your ears?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I learned yesterday what happens when the rubber tip comes off and gets banged up against your eardrum.
Oh, my God. You get that figured out, or are you listening in the other ear right now?
Well, what's really cool, those things have a hole in the middle of them, so you can poke the edges of it and turn around and you can hear just fine.
But
I had a guy take it out, but it took the entire day yesterday to get it out.
Oh my God.
Whew. Yeah. And so the guy who finally took it out, I go to Kaiser, which is great, great, wonderful 21st century healthcare. And the guy who took it out says he does 10 a week.
No way.
Yeah, those things aren't glued on, right? And the rubber wears a little bit, and if you have it in for a while, it gets warm and pliable, so they get loose.
Well, damn, that actually kind of freaks me out a little bit. I will pay more attention. So, well, hey, John, probably need to have you introduce yourself, and then we'll roll into a good tip for everybody. Pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
To that.
It's exactly a good tip.
Wow.
Keep the tip out of your ear.
Well, and one more reason that Apple has got it going on, because it's a solid unit. You don't have to, you lose that thing, it's a big old bud, right? I mean, it's the whole thing. You got bigger problems if you lose that in your ear.
That's right. So I'm John Sumser, and I am the editor of the HR Examiner, which if you're not reading the HR Examiner, you should be. It's at hrexaminer.com. We send out a weekly compilation of 4 to 6 articles that are generally designed to make you rethink the things you know about HR. And so we cover the whole broad array of HR and do it at the edges. So this is not a great place to find practical advice for anything. It's a great place to check your assumptions and start thinking about what the future is going to be. And that's really important because the way that things get done in HR in the future is not the same as the way we're doing them currently. So the other thing that I do is I run an analyst company, and for people who are practitioners, you may not know that there are companies who look at the broad range of HR technology and the way that it's developing and help vendors and practitioners figure out where the right relationship is. And my analyst company is called HRX Analysts, and we look more closely at psychographics and how to make sure that what you're doing fits your needs than others do. So those are my two bits and pieces. How's that?
Hey, you know, that's some good stuff right there. And I definitely huge fan of the content you guys put out. Obviously, I don't always agree with it, which is part of the best part about it, right? Is you got to get thinking and have an opinion. And you guys put out solid work. Huge fan of what comes out of there, good, bad, and indifferent. So appreciate the contribution to the community, HR community as a whole, talent community, HCM community, technology community, pick a community, a lot of communities.
Yep. So we're the place. I can give you a list of places to go if what you want are answers. We're the place to go if what you want are questions.
Lovely. That is all money right there.
Yep.
So what's top of mind, my friend? You've been traveling all over creation. You've been hanging out with some people that push the bounds. Obviously, my partner and co-host, Mr. Tim Kep's, always good for engaging thought and contribution. So what's going on?
Well, so a couple of things. What prompted this conversation today is I'm going to be speaking at the Social Recruiting Strategies Conference in Chicago at the end of the month. And there I'm going to be talking about the history and future of social HR and social recruiting. So that's something I want to drop back to. As I have wandered around the planet now, what I am noticing most is that we're in a period of really interesting change in the HR function, and the way that you can tell that is there's no evidence of innovation in the technology markets. So that's kind of counterintuitive. What that means is when there's a lot of technology innovation in and around HR, it's because people in HR are doing the same things over and over again so the vendors can innovate. When HR starts to shift in its roles and responsibilities and methods, then the technology universe has to slow down and wait to figure out where the function is going. So I'm seeing a shortage of innovation from vendors and a change in the way things get done on the part of HR people. And that's fascinating to me.
Well, it's almost, and by the way, everybody, for you Zodiac folks out there, Mercury is in retrograde. So the innovation of HR technology is slightly in retrograde also, I might add. It just feels like it's totally static. I really, truly haven't heard of anything, and I would love to hear, you say any and just pick something out that you're like, okay, that's an interesting, even new application. I haven't really heard of anything in the last, my gosh, probably 12 months that really kind of made you go, wow, that is pushing the bounds. That seems to be where that's going to make an impact long term. Do you have anything that's even remotely close?
So here's part of what I think is going on. Part of it is all of the software that you could buy to do HR stuff, so learning management systems, talent management systems, payroll, succession planning, assessment, background checking, recruiting, applicant tracking, job posting, all of that stuff is really the automation of paperwork. All of that stuff isn't actually doing the HR job, it's getting the paperwork done, right? And I like to draw the parallel with Salesforce.com, which is, if you don't know, a great tool for managing sales forces. And In Salesforce.com, all of the salespeople who use it hate it. And all of the sales managers who use it love it. Because the software doesn't really help you do your job. It helps you report to your management about what you're doing. Right? And so it feels like increased surveillance with little benefit when you're using Salesforce.com and you're a salesperson. That you get a lot of that same sort of feedback about contemporary HR software from practitioners. The software helps organize stuff, but it doesn't help do the job. And as that stuff gets organized, people in HR are increasingly free to focus on what the actual job is. And the actual job isn't a process. It isn't paperwork. It isn't automated paperwork. It isn't any of that stuff. The actual job is getting to know people, getting good at making judgments about people the way they are today, the way they're going to be in the future, and how you move them from here to the future, and doing that on behalf of a hierarchy. So it's not like a clergy job where the clergyman's role is to look at people and help them get better. The HR person's job is to look at and navigate people in a variety of ways and help them get better in the way that they work best for the company. And there's not really much good language about that. There's not really much good guidance about that. There's not really much, if you go look at all of the stuff that SHRM helps you do, and it's a great deal of really interesting stuff, it's all procedural, and what practitioners are discovering is that the real work isn't procedural. And so that's changing HR because the automation is acceptably good, so people can go focus on doing the real job.
John, do you think part of or one of the larger challenges is the fact that operationally, and this could be from an accounting system to a point of sale system to held to QuickBooks, there is literally, it's very difficult to find companies who have connected the data, right? The people data with the operational data, which at the end of the day is the profit and loss. And so the warehousing of the aggregate of that data is really expensive and really difficult to find the warehousing ability to then pull and draw conclusions and create questions and create answers off of said data that you've now married up, right? Succession planning rarely touches into like hardcore tangible basically KPIs and performance, actual financial data.
Right, and it doesn't tie into some sort of a calibrated assessment of the real politics of the organization, right? So some of it is, as you say, and let's go back because QuickBooks is such an easy thing, and pretty much anybody can understand QuickBooks. You have to ask yourself why, when I use a debit or credit card, that doesn't immediately show up in my QuickBooks stuff. What sort of stupidity is it that I have to go to a separate system and load the information into QuickBooks? It's bizarre that I have to do that. It's not a little bizarre that I have to do that, because all QuickBooks is an automated procedure, and when people designed QuickBooks, they didn't really think about the future that we're in right now where the data is already digital and ought to be married. So the same thing is true of HR systems. Nobody really thought about data integration. And it is nuts that you have to use separate systems because every time you use a separate system, you corrupt the data. So every system that requires you to create a record field that's got a name in it is an opportunity for somebody to misspell the name. So on a big global scale, in my Delta Airlines frequent flyer record, my first name is John R. because somewhere somebody dropped the ball and moved my middle initial into my name. And so when I go through customs on a passport, on my passport and a Delta ticket, they always have to ask me three additional questions because the stuff doesn't match up. That error, that specific error, getting the name right, is something that anybody who's handling data in HR has to deal with every day. That's what all those spreadsheets are about, is reconciling the way the data is in one system with the way that the data is in another system to produce an answer that combines the two. So you get there because in the end, most software companies grow by acquisition rather than building the tool set.
Right.
And when you acquire disparate pieces of software, integrating the data is sort of an afterthought. You're starting to see now that so what looks like innovation is very dry. Ceridian, for instance, is migrating all of its internal intelligence into a new tool built by Dayforce that's a single code stack, single rules engine, single data structure offering that solves all of this problem, because in their old stuff, they've got a bunch of different cats and dogs who have different habits, you know, and the data doesn't really match up. That's true of Oracle, that's true of SAP, that's true of IBM, that's true of the subset of Oracle called Taleo, it's true of SuccessFactors. It's generically true of any company that does acquisitions. And so that big mess is going to get cleaned up pretty quickly, and that's going to change the landscape. And when it gets cleaned up, the first thing that you'll get is real interesting data. The second thing that you'll get is that data re-embedded in the software, right? So analytics, everybody's looking at analytics as the next wave. And analytics is just the precursor to having the analytics stuff back into the software. Because a report about how good you're doing delivered to your manager is one thing. Having your software intelligent enough to go, the last 5 times you did this thing, here's what you did. Do you want to reuse that? Or are you talking about the same guy? Or blah, 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 like that. So that the software begins to have a memory and begins to have a reference to external data, that's the thing that comes after the analytics get real good. That's where big data really starts to inform decision makers, so that this thing I was talking about earlier, the real judgment that HR people do for a living, starts to get facilitated by the tools we use.
Well, and let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, it's Brian talking with John Sumpser. So what's interesting is the fact that, I mean, I was a, oh my gosh, 1997 was a Cognos user, the Cube. And, you know, used to be a daily feed that came down out of SQL. And it is amazing that, you know, that we're, you know, finally getting to the point that it's going to start being more intelligent as far as, you know, as it's trying to get smarter as far as the algorithms and being able to tap into other data sets around, I mean, who knows? I mean, it could literally be a feed, you know, some kind of semantical, you know, sentiment feed off of a blog post that's pulling and seeing where people are actually trending off of some article, right? And then maybe does something with that. I mean, the possibilities are limitless. And so, I mean, I'm excited about that.
So this is really, you know, your mobile phones are sort of interesting because you have a computer in your pocket. But what we're really talking about is the software that makes immersive computing like Google Glass a reality. So here's the difference. I think this is a really instructive difference. If you use, so I was in Amsterdam, and I don't know anything about Amsterdam. I had to navigate Amsterdam with my phone, and the phone's really good. It knows where the train stops are, so you get off and on the train as you wander through town in Amsterdam. But when you use maps on a phone, you look at the map, and then you have to compare the map to the streets that are going by or to the subway map, right? So you've got this picture of where you are. It's even got a little blue dot. But in order to use it effectively, you need external data to make the decision about when to get off the train. I got a chance to wear Google Glass on this train. And when it was time to get off the train, Google Glass said, get off the train. Because the data about where we were and the data in the maps and the intelligence to make decisions were all integrated in the Google Glass application. So there wasn't me feeling like I had to wait till just the right moment to integrate all the pieces that I had to make the decision to get off the train. The machine had the data. It was all seamlessly integrated, and it said, go. That is what data integration in an immersive, wearable environment is like. So you're not busy trying to make sure that it all fits together. It does all fit together. And that takes a lot of the headache out of computing.
Sure.
Makes sense?
That algorithm. Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it actually lets you start to have shortcuts in the process, because it's already ahead. It's already got the answers. It just needs to marry up kind of exactly what the question is, and it all does
right.
And it gets smarter every time that people can react to it, and you take outside variables. I mean, at the end of the day, the best programs actually help you do that. Whether it's mobile or you're standing, I'm on a screen. And it's like, oh, yeah. Here, maybe think about going this direction, because we've got data points that suggest that that's a lot more efficient for you. You make the call,
right.
Free will. So how does that look? Okay, let's go kind of just keep going with this direction on. So what does that look like around kind of a bench strength report? So we're looking at a population of a few thousand people. And, what does that start to look like on the classic dashboard for, the leadership who's trying to build a class, a really, really, truly high-powered organization?
So wouldn't it be nice to have at your fingertips? So let's say I'm the guy pulling the strategy together and Wempen is on the list. And I know that Wempen is really ambitious and really persistent, but because he's only 27 years old, there's just some stuff he doesn't know. And so I have some idea about that stuff he doesn't know, and I want to find ways to expose him to that stuff he doesn't know. And because I'm pulling this together for the company or the department, there are 25 other people like Wempen who I have to think about. And because I have to think about so many variables, sometimes I don't get it exactly right, because there's a lot of data insight and possibility to juggle. So if I had a tool that helped me see Wempen in all of his richness, strengths and weaknesses alike, and then also allowed me access to selected data about tasks, exercises, and opportunities in the organization that might fill in the gap in some of those places where he could use some development. It'd make life a lot easier. Right now, that is a calculus that people do in their heads, and it's likely to be the case that we get way more effective at helping people develop because we have access to richer and richer data about them, and access to richer and richer data about what works in the real world.
I wonder if you could, I know you could, but what does a cultural tapestry look like where you can take all that data and actually look at performance and look at, traditional satisfaction levels, look at customer feedback and start to actually start to literally create what exactly the weave looks like on the cultural tapestry. What does that application look like? Because I don't think, I just right now there's nothing, because people for the most part are like, culture really can't be measured. The ones that do say they can measure it, it's kind of bullshit the way they do it. So it's really, it's a different twist on, you know, a classic satisfaction survey. You know, thoughts around that? Because that seems, I think that's very elusive still.
So I'm gonna blast this to the end of the show on this. Here's the question that because people in our industry are a little uncomfortable with engineering mathematics, this is a question that's not as hard to answer as it might be. And so I'm gonna tell you a story about Microsoft. Microsoft has been measuring candidate quality for 6 or 7 years now. And the first thing that they'll tell you is that they don't know if their definition of talent quality is right, that they're happy to have drinks with you in the evening to debate whether or not it's right and whether or not you can do it, but they need to measure something. And so they've got a definition, and that's what they're measuring. 6 or 7 years later, they have 100,000 measurements. And it turns out that, and I'm going to give you another example, too. It turns out that it doesn't matter whether or not it's a perfect measurement of quality of hire or candidate quality. What matters is that you're consistent in the way that you measure it, right? Because as long as the inch is the same inch, then you can do things with it. And everybody knows that an inch is just an arbitrary thing, and the trick is repeating the use of that arbitrary thing, not getting some perfect inch done, right? So the same thing is true. Right now, as I'm sitting here, I have on my wrists a Fitbit measurement device and a Jawbone measurement device. They're pedometers and sleep monitoring tools, and I'm trying to figure out which one is better. The Fitbit gives me about 20% more steps every day than the Jawbone does, but I can't tell you which one is more accurate. So I like the Fitbit because it says I'm doing better. Right?
Solid plan, man. I like it.
So if I keep measuring with the Fitbit, what's going to be true is that improvement or regression against the standard measurement is what matters, not whether it's a precise count of the number of steps I took.
Right. Your line of sight, you're totally in plumb as long as you stay with one measurement. One single point of measurement is your line of sight on that. Got it.
Yeah. If you use the same ruler, then the same inch is going to be the same inch, and it doesn't matter if it's a perfect inch.
Right.
And so cultural fit, cultural measurement is going to follow the same lines. People are going to pick things that they want to measure because, well, now you can measure a lot of stuff. And the people who get busy measuring and get out of arguing about what the right thing to measure is are going to wind up 5 years from now with measurements that they can use to solve problems. So the answer is it's going to start happening fast, and it doesn't matter if the measurement is the right measurement or the wrong measurement. You'll be able to understand that and correct that the more measurements you have, and you can't figure it out without measuring.
Well, John, that is good stuff. We got about 40 seconds left. Always good to chat with you. Good conversation. We didn't actually get – I've got an idea around a performance management tool that looks like Snapchat. We can get to that. That's for a different show. That's some innovation there.
Okay, well, let's have that back.
Cool. Well, that sounds good. My friend, have a good holiday. Again, always good to talk with you. Hopefully, the jet lag. Folks, we are out. And I hope everybody is safe and enjoys themselves. And later.
Bye. Thanks.